like us to begin. My apologies for being late. Just caught up in a few administrative matters before coming here. J.B. Sibanyoni is on his way. He'll be a little late. I'm not aware that there's any other apologies. Yeah, they both were. But I'm not sure if she'll be attending Protection of State Information. All right. Also an apology from Gosi Holomisa. No further apologies? Okay. All right. Good morning, Mr. Redman, Mr. Lovestachny. I'm going to speak to us about state liability and submissions and the department's and the department's responses.
Thank you so much. Good morning. We brought with us today Mr. Neville Kahula, sitting behind me here. I'm sure you all know him. He is from our litigation unit, and he has been asked to assist us, especially in regard to the comments that we received relating to civil law and civil litigation. Chair, and then may I also just say that there are officials from National Treasury, and you might just want to ask them to introduce themselves. You will recall at the last meeting you indicated that they should also attend our meetings in future because of their involvement in the bill itself. They are in the back there.
Thanks, Chair. My name is Freeman Nomvalo, the Accountant General, and may I also apologize that around about 12:30, I unfortunately have to. I'm moving to the Eastern Cape in the afternoon, and the flight is only at about midday. I've got a meeting in the afternoon there, so I will be leaving. But Janine Bethna Kiyose will be here today and tomorrow. She's from our legal department. Thank you.
Chair, if you will allow me, I would just like to recap on where we stand at the moment. You will recall that when we briefed the committee on the bill, we did indicate that during 2009 we published two bills, a constitutional amendment bill and a state liability amendment bill. But as a result of the comments that we received on those two bills, which were highly critical, we decided to only proceed with a state liability amendment bill, and then also only to give effect to the order of the Constitutional Court in the Niyati judgment. This we did, Chair, and as we indicated earlier, we followed the order of the Constitutional Court to the letter. We were therefore, Chair, we were hoping that this bill before the committee now would pass without many problems, and that it would be plain sailing. However, the comments that we have received made it clear to us that the matter is perhaps more complicated than we originally thought. We asked, last time when we attended the committee meeting, we asked for 2 weeks to evaluate the comment. And we have prepared a document containing the comments and our responses thereto. But you will note, Chair, from the document that we have made available, that our responses, you will note that there is still a lot of work to be done. Firstly, Chair, we have submitted the comments to National Treasury because of their involvement, to also obtain their views, and we are still awaiting a response from them. Perhaps they can indicate to the committee when they will be in a position to respond to the comments that we have received. Secondly, Chair, a number of policy decisions need to be taken in regard to some of the comments that we receive. For example, the question of execution against immovable property. Commentators argued that restricting execution against movable property only will be unconstitutional. Now, we're not sure We're not sure whether this is in fact the case. The state law advisors declared the bill to be constitutional, and they certified the bill. And as indicated, Chair, we followed the letter of the order of the Constitutional Court, and the Constitutional Court also only referred to movable property and not to immovable property. And the question arises if the argument is that restricting to execution against movable property, the question then arises, why did the Constitutional Court also not deal with this matter?
Mm-hmm.
A further example of where we think a policy decision needs to be taken is the question of execution against state property as opposed to execution against property of a relevant department. You will recall that some commentators argue that it should not be restricted to execution against the property of a particular department or the relevant department, but it should be extended to execution against state property. In other words, if an order is made against justice, then the then execution may proceed against property belonging to the Department of Home Affairs. Now, we also find that rather strange, and we're not quite sure how to deal with that situation. Depending on what we decide, Chair, on these policy issues, we will probably have, at a later stage, we will have to go back to Cabinet to take a final decision on these matters. Of course, we accept that you are the legislature, but we will have to go back to Cabinet because if we proceed with amendments along the lines suggested by the commentators, those amendments will affect all government departments at the national as well as provincial level, and we will have to inform Cabinet and get a final decision from Cabinet. Then thirdly, Chair, the comments deal with aspects of civil law and civil litigation, which to our mind will require further research and consultation with experts in the field of civil law. And there where we feel this is necessary, we did indicate so in the document, and as I indicated earlier, that is why Mr. Kawula has become involved. Chair, he is an expert in civil law, and I'm sure he will be able to assist us. But we will probably also have to consult with magistrates in the field of civil law, practicing civil law, and perhaps some other experts as well. And then finally, Chair, there are a number of amendments that we support. We have indicated so in our document, those amendments that we support, and we have already drafted amendments for your consideration. So this will be a working document. There might be other amendments that we will have to bring in here, but we have started with the amendments. We have also submitted the comments to our state law advisors, and we hope to sit down with them very soon, Chair, to discuss some of these issues with them as well. Chair, as indicated, we have provided you with a document. The document contains the comments and our responses. I'm not sure whether you want us to start with this document and to work through the document and indicate to you where we have problems and what still needs to be done. And if that is what you would like us to do, then I will ask you, you want to start with this document that you have before you.
Into the document that's headed summary of submissions.
I'm not sure whether you would like to discuss the issues that I have raised by way of recap and just giving you sort of an indication of on where we stand with some of these issues and how we intend dealing with them.
Chair, I don't know. I mean, effectively, Mr. Rudman, is we put pressure on them because of the pressure from on us to pass the bill by so that it can be enacted by the 3rd of August. And we put pressure on them because I definitely from my side there was a hope that maybe we could pass this bill before we rise for the local government elections. I think from Mr. Rudman's input that's clearly not feasible. And in any event, it is a section 75 bill unless there is any dispute on the tagging. So the NCOP process does not need to take too long. So my fear about going through the document that we've just been given now, haven't had a chance to read it, is that it's not complete. And I think we it's useful to go through things and identify where we as the committee want more work to be done. But I'm just a little bit worried about going through something where, even from the department side, it's not complete. So I'm not sure, I'm not clear on my own mind, but I'm questioning the usefulness of going through this document. It may be useful if we do deal with the two questions around and try and resolve them around immovable property and the proceeding against other departments. I would suggest maybe we deal with those two questions. I don't know while we've got while we've got Mr. Nombalo here, whether there's anything he wants to say, although government is basically, you know, there's one government, not two. So effectively, Treasury and Justice should be on the same page. But maybe if we do give, seeing we've got the Accountant General, it's a very grand title, here to give him the opportunity if there is anything that he wants to say. But Chair, then in short, what I'm saying is I think, sorry, General, why he's here. I mean, I don't know how often we will get a General here. It's a grand title, so it would be if there's anything else. But Chair, then I think in short, what I'm saying is I don't think there's value going through this document yet until they've completed. That we do look at immovable and multi, whether you can proceed against another department, and then we do give the Accountant General an opportunity to make an input if he so wishes.
Thanks, Chair. I thought I was going to observe only, but there's two reasons why Treasurer has got an interest in the legislation. One,
your associates, please switch off my cell phone.
See? On the computer. Okay, we just switch it off then. Okay. Yeah. It's not disconnected. The first one is that there are far-reaching implications on the bill in terms of the state delivering on services when there's attachment of state property. We had a view, even on the issue of immovable property, that it. We don't think it would be desirable for that, and as Mr. Advocate Rodman has indicated, that the Constitutional Court did not address itself to this issue, I think for good reason, but the Constitutional Court specifically did not address itself to this question. We think there are risks. There are commentators that commented and made reference to issues around appropriation bill and so on. And saying that if the liability of the state is met, surely these would not have been budgeted, and if they're not budgeted, then what happens? So we thought that we could assist the committee on such questions as well. We had sufficient consultation with the Department of Justice when the bill was being prepared. And in the light of the question of the comments that have come up, we are considering those comments, and in a week time or so, we're going to be meeting with the Department of Justice to deliberate on some of those comments that came from the public, and again try and find a common ground with the department on how these issues can be resolved. The number of other questions that the commentators have raised. that require further thinking on the bill itself. The issue of the appropriation, I just want to get to that comment specifically. The issue of the appropriation, the implications of the Appropriation Act, there's a few things to say. The first one is a general point. If any department is undertaking activities to meet its obligations in terms of its mandate, it commits with outsiders. It commits state funds with outsiders. Sometimes such commitments, in law, they shouldn't be beyond what is budgeted, but sometimes they do get to be beyond what is budgeted. And if they get to be beyond what is budgeted, it's normally called unauthorized expenditure, and there's a process in which that gets dealt with. So it appears to me that the manner in which this would be dealt with would have to be similar. So you can't delay the payment necessarily just because it was not budgeted, but it, once you've made that payment, the internal processes that the state has to deal with unauthorized expenditure would have to be the same processes that would have to be dealt with to deal with this matter over the medium term. But immediately, from a department's perspective, that would be affected. It is important that the department explore some of the provision in the PFMA around reprioritization, shifting of funds, and creating savings somewhere in order to deal with that payment. That would be what the department can do immediately and honor this. But if that is not possible, you still have a dispensation that deals with how unauthorized expenditure is dealt with, and this would have to be dealt with in the same manner as that unauthorized expenditure. Having said that, Chair, we think that there are issues that we still need to engage with the Department of Justice and ourselves to make sure that all of the comments that came through are responded to adequately. At the same time, the state is not put at risk in so doing. The other point is I think I've covered the issues. Then the issue of removal report, which I've commented on, that we also, like the Department of Justice, agree that it should not be possible to attach immovable property. But then the question arises, how do you then respond adequately to the obligations that the state may have towards third parties? How do you resolve that question? Because you don't want to go back to where you were before the Nyati case came up. And that is the question that we haven't responded to adequately at the moment. The Advocate Radman has also referred to attaching to the property of other departments. We also think that it would be difficult to put an obligation on another accounting officer for something another accounting officer has failed to do, because it makes it difficult for that accounting officer to meet his or her obligations and deliver on the mandate that they have. But they would have had nothing to do with the actions of the other accounting officer that failed to honor his obligation and failed to honor a court decision, and as a result there would be a final court order that these issues be attached. And we think that would not be fair on the other accounting officer as far as you're concerned as the treasurer. The other proposal talks about the biospheres, not just other departments. You go and attach provincial assets, you go and attach municipal assets, or something happens at municipality, you move up to other spheres. Again, for the same reason that why we don't think it's advisable to attach the properties of other departments, we don't think that would be advisable. And there's a legislation that deals with intergovernmental fiscal relations, and what are the implications of such action to that piece of legislation as well. So it's all of those issues that we think we ought to take cognizance of Having said that, I again want to emphasize, how do we then deal with the questions that other commentators are raising around how do you make sure that that which is attached caters adequately for the obligations of the state? And I think that's a question we need to possibly respond to. And we, there are discussions that were in the Treasury, but we haven't shared those discussions with the Department of Justice, and therefore I don't think it's appropriate without having shared and maybe get a different perspective from the Department of Justice on those issues to raise them here, Chair. Thank you.
Chair, perhaps just on the question of movable property and immovable property. My personal view is that if we decide that it will be unconstitutional to exclude immovable property, we will have to include immovable property in our bill. But then there are further options, and the commentators also referred to that. Then there are options. For example, one can then draft an amendment which reads that you should first attach movable property, and only if that does not satisfy the judgment debt, then you can execute against immovable property. But I want to repeat, only if we decide that it is going to be unconstitutional the way we have formulated it at the moment, because we can't pass legislation that is unconstitutional, and we can't afford this matter to be taken to the Constitutional Court again. So, but that is the point that we still need to sort of clear, whether it is unconstitutional or not. Because as I've indicated, the Constitutional Court itself, in its order, only deals with movable property and not immovable property. And the question arises, why did that happen? Why did the Constitutional Court not also refer to immovable property? So, but one cannot perhaps argue that because they did not refer to immovable property that they think it will be constitutional, because they might not have considered that question. It only arose through the comments that we have received. But that is a question that we will have to pose to the state law advisors. They will have to assist us, and the arguments in this committee itself, members might feel that it is unconstitutional, and then we will have to consider that. But to my mind, it will be wrong, or if it's not necessary, we should not allow attachment against immovable property of the state. I can really not foresee a situation where attachment against movable property will not be adequate to satisfy a judgment debt, unless the debt really goes into millions and millions and millions of rand. Because all government departments own property. So as I said, if we think that it's unconstitutional, then we will have to look at different options. And there are different options that one can consider. As I said, the one is to allow attachment only against movable property as a first resort, and only if that does not satisfy the judgment debt, then immovable property, and only then under certain circumstances, because we have provision in our bill that you cannot attach property which is necessary for the proper functioning of that department. So, I mean, if you go and attach a building and you sell the building, then I mean, it will affect service delivery tremendously. So that can also be taken into account. But really, that is a very difficult question that we need to decide. And the same as applies to the question whether you can attach, if the order has been made against the Justice Department, I mean, how can you go and attach then property belonging to Home Affairs? As the Accountant General has indicated, the Accounting Officer of Home Affairs should not be responsible for the mistakes, if I can call it that, of another department. So those are very difficult issues that we need to decide on, and as I indicated, we will probably have to go back to Cabinet with some of these comments, depending on what we decide on the way forward should be.
Law advisors, or ask them to consider the question. whilst we are also applying our minds to it, so that we don't ask them to comment on it right now, but to take into consideration both the Accountant General's and the Department's comments, particularly with regard to the constitutionality or otherwise of restricting this amendment to just movable property, and also the whole question of execution against state property in general, as opposed to the relevant department. I think you can do that for us. Right. I've seen a lot of hands. Debbie, and then Dr. Ambrosini, Mr. Jeffrey, Dean Smuts, Prof. Ndabandaba. No more takers for now.
I agree with you. I think that is the way to go, but I would like them to specifically consider the aspect of equality in the Constitution, because, I mean, as far as I understand, that was the essential issue, that you can't put the state on a different level to other judgment status. And, you know, if you can't, private companies are not exempt. I mean, it doesn't matter whether their operations are critically affected by attaching their property. So why is it different for the state? I mean, I do sympathize with that, though, having said that. But, yeah, we need to look at the issue of equality in general. Thanks.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Two apologies, two technical points, and a proposal backed by policy perspective. The first apology, I've not been involved in this bill, but I followed, and I will take this opportunity to provide an input. The second apology, I will need to go to the ad hoc committee on the protection of information, so I will be leaving early. The first technical point, I think there must be clarity, and it's best for the state advisor to apply their mind and respond in due court, on what are the entities, the juristic entities. My understanding is that these entities are established under the Constitution and not under the law. There are certain entities established under the law. Those are the companies, the various entities where we say it's a juristic person in our statutes. But the executive as such is established under the Constitution. If I read it correctly, we've got different entities. We've got one executive authority at the national level, and that's a single entity. That's the owner of assets. Then we've got 9 provincial entities for each of the provinces. And then we've got, I think, 400 district municipalities and a number of local municipalities that I don't know. But those are all the entities. And the subtitle would vest in those entities. And I need to understand whether I'm correct. Then on the issue of tagging, Mr. Chairman, I tried to squeeze my mind that there was a similar issue raised in respect of a different bill. This is not a provincial competence, but it does fall within those powers which are inherent, the Constitution says, implicit and necessary to the exercise of the powers. So the power over your assets, to conduct inventory, to own what you own, to keep your staff, it's an ancillary power. So I think that we should look carefully whether this is not a Section 76 bill. These are the two technical points, a proposal against a policy perspective. Policy perspective, you know, it's very predictable coming from me, but let me explain it in any way. In any case, I mean, we are talking here about the privileges of the sovereign. The sovereign gets a certain amount of privileges. Why? I mean, here we're dealing with people who went through the process of being wronged by the state, having to sue the state, having to go through court to get a final judgment, and at the end of all this, our correct policy perspective would be to roll out a red carpet and make it as easy as it can be for them to be paid, and some of the provisions do it. But other provisions create additional hoops that this poor, wronged citizen, wronged by the sovereign, need to go through to receive justice. That I find it untenable. I accept the difficulties. And here comes the proposal. What one should do is to establish a state bonding agency, which is the primary recipient of judgment and satisfied judgments. They got the cash, it's a bonding agency, then they go and they sell the building if they have to. is not in the bill, but within is not in the principal act. We are not the parliament to pass the principal act. We are new players. COP was not even there at the time. So I think we have the obligation of going beyond the constitutionality issues. The constitutional, I mean, when a bill is unconstitutional, the constitutionality often is the tip of an iceberg of the wrong policy. One accepts the practical implication, but the policy, the practical difficulties, in my humble opinion, the policy responds to those practicalities. Don't stop the executive function, don't take away what I need. It's the wrong policy. Is the wrong policy perspective. It's a 19th century policy answer, the privileges and immunities of the sovereign, rather than a 21st century policy answer. Let's create a kitty which will be ready to pay when there is a judgment, and if need be, they go and sell what they have to sell. I think that that's what we should look at. Mm-hmm. Much more complex, but it's worth, since the matter goes back to cabinet and they're reapplying their mind, they could perhaps consider doing the right thing for the people and not just for the state.
Chair, I was just thinking, whether do we even know need to go to the issue of constitutionality? Of course, it's the kind of question that must be ever present in our minds. But in this case, do we even need to go there? Because, I mean, we would surely agree, first and foremost, that we must satisfy the claims of the Mr. Jingan Nyatis of this world, the predators. They must be satisfied. Secondly, surely one has a kind of a sense of natural justice, if not all sorts of other things, that it would be wrong for any department that had not sinned to be liable for the debts that another department has incurred. And if that is so, I have begun to shift in my mind away from the immovable. Perhaps if the thing can't be satisfied through the disposal of the movable, then maybe you go to the immovable of that same department. So I'm in sympathy with the line of thinking that is developing there. On Dr. Ambrosini's point, where do I remember such an agency from? Is it Australia that has such a thing? Is it? Yeah, okay. And had we looked at that, I forget whether the main judgment, the first judgment, in fact, did deal with that issue. But is that not a possibility? May I ask the Accountant General something? What relationship is there between what he has described, the provisions departments make for... what was the kind of expenditure, sir?
Unauthorized expenditure.
For the unauthorized. How does that relate to or differ from the adjustment appropriation that we do every year around September, October, which is specifically for unforeseen expenditure, also for environments, not so. But would it be the case that you would, that a department would be able to come to us and say, oh, I didn't foresee that I would have to pay Mr. Dingaan Nyati 300,000 rand after having ruined his health and killed him? Would that be a case of for adjustment appropriation? If you could just clarify, please.
Look, also on the point of the immovable property, I would really feel, the submissions, I don't have a problem with the state law advisors. I mean, they did, as has been pointed out, already certify the bill as is. I don't have a problem with them making further submissions on their view on whether the bill should include immovable property. But the motivations are not particularly substantial. I mean, they're quite short. As has been pointed out, the Constitutional Court may not have applied their mind to immovable property, but they seemed quite happy to, or not seemed, they were happy to limit the order to movable. And I think there is an issue of the ramifications of attachment of government immovable property. So my view is that let's not try and second guess the Constitutional Court. Remember also that the original Inyati decision, there was a split decision around whether, what is it, Section 3 was unconstitutional or not, with Judge Nkabinda and the former Chief Justice feeling that it wasn't. Yeah. So, you know, I really think that given the pressures on us, that it's not necessary to, let's not go there. Nobody is going to be able to actually say whether it's. I'm confident. I'm happy that it's not unconstitutional, but I obviously can't say authoritatively. Nobody is going to be. It would only be the Constitutional Court, and I can just see us mired in days of debate over it. Let's leave it as movable, and if somebody wants to take it to court, for the court to rule it needs to be immovable, let's cross that bridge when we get to it. So that's the first point. The second point on the tagging, I think similarly, look, remember that the test is around legislative competency. Can the provinces, so it's not a question of administrative competency, the provinces, for example, have a lot to do with local government, but they don't have legislative competency over local government. Hence, the local government legislation is tagged Section 75. Let's not second guess the Constitutional Court on that. It's been tagged as Section 75. For us to on our own decide, no, that's been wrongly tagged, must be withdrawn and reintroduced to Section 76 is a nightmare. Let's proceed with it as Section 75. And then I think it also makes sense to me that if it's unfair that if again, given the equality aspect, I mean, I think it was referenced from Ms. Schaefer to private companies, but I mean, the state is not a private company. It works it operates on money raised from the citizens and businesses and basically residents, VAT, all that kind of aspect, which a private company doesn't. And then it delivers services, which a private company doesn't either. But I think that it just would not be right, or it would be unfair that a department that is well functioning suddenly has its property attached because some other department didn't behave properly. But having said that, so I feel that on both accounts that Mr. Rudman originally raised of let us leave it as is. We can get further written submissions, but I don't know if there's maybe you should ask members of the committee what their feelings. I'm having mutterings of support. I mean, Ms. Smuts, as she's wanted to do, likes doing a commentary as one speaks. She must speak for herself, but I've had mutterings of support for that view. Oh, you're split, they're split. Okay, all right, they need to go and sort out. But anyway, we may need to look at that aspect. But Chair, the issues I want to raise is the role, and this would be to Mr. Nombalo, the role of the Treasury in the Mokoro order, which is basically a key role for the Treasury, the Treasury, the relevant Treasury, national, provincial, causes the judgment debt to be settled or settles it itself, and if they fail to do so, then you can proceed, and the execution is against the department. Why have we not gone for? Why do we not go for that? I'm sure that Treasury would not be particularly excited about the overall responsibilities. What we've got in the bill then is it's each department up to itself. But given that the Treasury is effectively the department that controls state finance, it makes sense. And it does take into account Dr. Ambrosini's, I mean, it not it takes into account, but it does address itself to Dr. Ambrosini's concern for a central body. I mean, he wants an independent, he wants some other body, but at least you would have then a body within government, Treasury at national, provincial, Treasury at local. And it does take into account it does provide greater security regarding the argument that you should be able to attach other departments' bodies. So I'm keen to know why does Treasury not What's Treasury's problem with Judge Mokoto's order, which I think had come from, I think that had come from Treasury. So I think that's quite key. The other aspect that I'm concerned about, I'm not sure if it was sufficiently raised in the public hearings, but disciplinary action against officials who don't perform. Now, I think the argument was, okay, well, PFMA does provide. But PFMA doesn't provide for attachment of state property. So this is new. So if we've got to the level where an official is actually, due to their own slackness, not ensuring that debts are paid, unfortunately, if I succeed on this argument, maybe a Treasury official, but if an official is not ensuring that debts are paid, I think it would be useful from the legislature side to see something, like maybe, and put it into legislation, maybe reports to Parliament. So it doesn't necessarily have to be criminal sanction, it could be, but it could also be the naming and shaming element of a report to Parliament of why was this debt not paid. But anyway, Chair, those are my points. One, that we don't, I'm happy not to address or that we leave the bill as it is, as far as movable property. We don't try and second guess the Constitutional Court. We keep the tagging as it is. We keep the attachment of the relevant department to it being as it is. But my concerns for sort of more info is what's wrong with the Mokoto order of the role of Treasury, which is basically that Treasury is the central body, which I understand Treasury didn't like, but can they tell us why? And then other point is some kind of action against responsible officials, which may not necessarily be criminal, but may include sort of naming in Parliament and responses in Parliament.
Thank you, Chair. I've been fairly covered, but I do want to make a general comment, Chair, to say I really agree with Mr. Radman's point that under normal circumstances, movable property should ideally be enough. And I don't really foresee a situation where movable property would not be able to cover the debt. But however, I also concur Honorable Jeffrey's point that we should rather leave immovable property unless there are developments or complications, then we take it from there. Thank you, Chairman.
Chair, firstly, I tend to agree that we should limit ourselves to movable properties and stay away from immovable, as the Honourable JJ has mentioned. I think the implications would be too vast on service delivery if we start looking at immovable properties as well. That having been said, there are three role players here. There's the client department that at the end of the day has to pay the money. Secondly, you've got justice, that is the state attorney's office, that is the attorney of record when the court order is given. And thirdly, you've got treasury as well. Now, I'm just trying to think, if you've got the RAF fund, for example, the RAF states they've got liabilities for court cases, for their pending claims. That is built into their budget. Surely, departments should build into their budgets the contingency of pending court actions, because that is the crux of the problem. When the judgment is given, that department has not made provision for the payment of that judgment debt in terms of its budget for the year. And that is, even when I was practicing, you always had the problem that the department said, well, we can't pay because we just haven't budgeted for the money. Now, surely there should be a mechanism, and it's getting to what the Honourable JJ said about Treasury taking a role, but the state attorney can take a role as well. And the client department, surely in their budgeting process, there must be a way of saying, we've got this pending medical negligence claim that's worth $3 million that is running now, because the state attorney is linking on a day-to-day basis while the case is running with witnesses and everything. So I don't understand how they don't build into their budget process. The court dates are normally done, at the moment it's 2 years in advance for major cases, that they can, for that budget for that year, say there's a contingent claim here that must be built into our budget as a department. And I think that, and you make provision for that. That's, and when Dean said about the adjusted appropriation, It should be in your budget. And I think that is the critical problem. Then we won't even have a problem with having to sell movables or immovables. We've got to look, where is the problem? The problem is, at the point of judgment, the department's not having the money at that stage and not building it into a contingent reserve. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. Like Dr. Ambrosina, I would like to apologize for my long absence that's related to my studies that are coming to an end now.
Of course.
Of course, yes. Thanks. Chair, I agree with all the points that John Jeffrey, as well as Mr. Swart. But I would also would like to ask if we are going to have a further take on this, to the department to tease out a little bit for us at some point when we meet again, the issue of equality, whether there is a validity of argument. I suspect there is, but also the issue that is being raised by Dr. Ambrosini. So I would like to hear from them more on that. Also, from Treasury, on the issue that Honourable Jeffrey is raising on National Treasury as the central body, also in line with Judge Mokoro's order. I also have, and in fact, I would not only just say Treasury must explain to us their point of departure, but I would like to sway them towards accepting that line of thought, because for me, National Treasury is the first custodian of state asset and property. So it doesn't make sense that Treasury would want to shirk this responsibility and denounce in a way exactly their centrality in terms of being the first custodian of state assets. So I would like to push them a little bit, in addition to supporting John Jeffrey in requesting what their rationale is to have a problem with it.
Thanks, Chair. I think a fundamental question that should occupy our minds is to respond to what the Constitutional Court has called upon ourselves to design a framework that will avoid another Nyati. That's a fundamental question, legislatively and otherwise. Now, the current proposal in terms of the bill, do they respond to the issues raised or the challenges raised by the Constitutional Court as a result of Nyati? And that goes or impacts directly on how the state ought to comply with its constitutional obligation, and consequently, and for me, it's how the state has managed or is currently managing litigation on behalf of the state or against the state. Currently, Mr. Chair, Rule 45 of the Uniform Rules of the High Court, which deals with the attachment of movable property, and Rule 46, which deals with the movable property, is currently under constitutional scrutiny in the Elsa Kutwana matter. It's a woman who has failed to honor her responsibilities in terms of the mortgage and the right of the registrar to authorize under Hammer the property being sold in execution. We have asked the matter, and it's still a matter that is we're awaiting judgment in that regard. But be that as it may, the current legislative framework calls upon the state to pay its debt within 30 days. Now, there's a lot of debates around whether the inefficiency regard administration and so on, whether will the state be able to do that. Linked with that question is the question on whether or not can we allow an arbitrary situation whereby a private individual who's a litigant to the proceedings, that his or her property goes in civil execution as opposed to that of the state, based on the principle of equality. Mr. Jeffers was correct. In the minority judgment written by Nkabinde, where he tried to justify the demonstration when it's the state is a judgment, a debtor, as opposed to the private individual, that you've got to balance that in terms of what the objective that has been sought. And the objective that has been sought in that regard is very clearly to create, to avoid chaos and so on behalf of the state. The third point is also what most of the commentators has raised around the issue of whether or not do you confine the state's responsibilities in terms of whether or not you proceed against the movable property at this stage insofar as it relates to the responsibility of the third level of government, which is local government as well, where my office is seized on a daily basis with complaints that they don't satisfy their judgment, especially sounding in money. Now, it's better for us now to also apply our minds in terms of responsibility in that regard. But what Honourable Mr. Swartz has also raised is that the Office of the State Attorney, who appears on behalf of the government in litigation of the state, we pay the advocates, in other words, counsel that represent the state from our own budget. It's not budgeted for because we can't budget for litigation. You don't know what might happen in the next 2 or 3 months. But I think Mr. Mvalo can assist here. I think in order to alleviate or to minimize the risk of government not complying with its obligation or orders in judgment standing in money, can we have a leeway as state attorneys from our current systems in terms of recovery of agency fees to authorize payment or principal payment? I think that is possible. We can look at that at that option. But thirdly, also, is that we can only as a state respond as satisfied judgment where we as state attorneys have dealt with the matter. But Mr. Swartz, there are cases where several other state departments use private attorneys and the judgments are given against the state. Can you put that as responsibility of the state attorney who acted on behalf of the state? In the case of a private attorney who acted on behalf of that department, where do you draw the line there? So I think let me confine myself on those issues for now, but also to look at the role of municipality in the context of the litigation of Section 239 of the Constitution. Thanks.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, I don't feel that we should just abandon the idea of equality, and I'm scared my colleague agrees with me, but I just, in the light of the judgment, if we could have some assurance in the light of the judgment as a whole, not just necessarily the order at the end where they may or may not have applied their mind to movable and immovable property. I mean, Mr. Rudman has said already that the likelihood of immovable property being attached is going to be very little anyway, so then what's the problem, you know? I mean, I fully agree with all the other proposals that we need to look at other mechanisms of budgeting in advance and so on. I mean, these things don't come out of the blue. And I agree with the state attorney's comments that they might not be involved in every matter, which is why the department should be the one budgeting, in my view. For they know, the departments know when cases are coming up. And as Mr. Fogg said, they are on the roll for about 2 years before they come to finalization anyway. So it's not something that comes out of nowhere. So I fully agree with all of those aspects, but I would still like an assessment of the judgment in the light of the equality provision as to, I mean, I think we all accept that the state can be treated in some slightly different way to private companies. But it's, I mean, at the end of the day, the issue is to try and protect litigants who are trying to claim money from the state who are being obstructed at every turn and are themselves suffering hardship because of it. And I think we need to just look at that.
So, Mr. Chairman, the bigger the judgment claim, the bigger the injustice, which was done very often. But let me step back, if I may, to what I had in mind in my proposal. But let me premise by this first. See, if I were to execute a judgment against the state, I would attach the car of a minister. That usually does it. Or and the movable properties, I understand it. Or press the car. No, the office car, the bulletproof. And okay, so it was was a wisecrack, not a good one, forgive me. No, but as I understand it, all again, this is an issue of clarity of titles. All the movable property, I'm given the impression that is titled in the name of the state in care of the Department of Public Works. I don't think that there is a title that says Department of Home Affairs, Department of Justice, etc. The entity is the state at the national level. Point one. Point two, I understand, and I tend to be correct, but I seem to understand that the Treasury doesn't have any money. It's not a place where there is a big vault where they keep money. The Treasury creates the budget, it's got its own budget to run itself, and comparatively with other departments, it's got less assets than other departments. So it's not, per se, a place which can be the recipients of people coming with a judgment to be paid. What we are looking at judgment, especially if we maintain the provision of judgment must be paid within 30 days, we are looking, let's look at any other company. We've got a shortfall of 30 days. It's a negative cash flow. It needs to be paid and it needs to be recuperated. If we were a company, we would just go to a bank and get a credit line. What I was suggesting is effectively the same thing. Establishes an agency. The agency is the recipient. The agency pays off and there's the possibility of going to the banking system or to the treasury to have a credit facility to be replenished within 2 months or 3 months. Huh? And if they don't do it, then we pass the adjustment law if it is too much and we make those transfers. They will go to the treasury, they will negotiate, they find the money where there is. If the judgment is against the Department of Home Affairs and for some strange reason wants to keep the department going, they will try to get the money from wherever it is. Perhaps there is a budgetary surplus in justice, and justice will pitch in. But those are the dynamics within government, dealing with government budget, which requires negotiation, requires that the Treasury to be the arbiter of all this, which cannot affect the poor citizen who has been wronged by the government and has a judgment against it. It needs to have a point of entry, and it's a short-term cash flow problem. A small entity, small juristic entity, which can raise the money on the immediately if need be, doesn't need to be funded, raises the money on the market, good faith, full faith and credit of the South African government, and then replenishes it, getting it from the relevant department. At the national level, at the provincial level, at the municipal level. I could draft it and as an amendment, but I'm sure that the Treasury, if it accepts the concept, it would have much more fun in drafting itself.
My difficulty with Dr. Ambrosini's suggestion is it's practically not possible within the time limits that we have got. In terms of when we have to pass the bill and when the bill has to be operational. So even if we did agree if we didn't have local government elections and we went, if it's here there in Australia, if we examined Australia carefully and decided this was a great thing, it would just not be possible to implement. How are you going to set up an agency? But my point is more, unlike Ms. Mentor, it's not... I mean, with respect to the Treasury officials, it's not persuading them, it's what we want. But I think the issue is quite complex. So, and maybe it's putting, if they were not prepared, it may be putting them in the spot now, but I think we need a proper input presentation on why the mechanism in the Mkhoro order is not followed. So I think they can give some initial responses now if they like, but I think we need something more substantial. I imagine they don't like it because of the responsibility it gives to Treasury, and it's not nice. But I think it is then centralizing the whole issue, because although Treasury does not have have their own budget, which is limited. They are the body that determines
or plays a huge part, or not a huge, yeah, determines the budget for the other departments subject to parliamentary approval. And there are contingency funds elsewhere in government which may need to be accessed by way of legislative amendments, I mean a special appropriation bill. But that bill comes from Treasury, so if there's a huge debt because a whole lot of people got brain damaged in a local hospital, the provincial health department can't pay, and it's got to come out of... Yeah, so the whole issue that Mr. Swart was raising, of departments complaining they cannot access, they don't have the money, that can be assisted with an active Treasury involvement. So I don't know, for me it's quite crucial that I really like the process in the Makgoro judgment. I would like Treasury to properly motivate why they feel that is not appropriate. I do though, I mean, stress that Treasury, as in the Makgoro judgment, Treasury get the play the role of receipt, but it is the department, the relevant department, not Treasury, that gets its assets, its movable assets attached. So so basically just to stress that. But for me, that's the sort of most outstanding element. On the issue of the movable versus immovable, I don't know where we go on that. I mean, there's general consensus. We can hear from the state law advisors. Maybe when their response comes in, we can have a further debate on it.
All right, Accountant General, just before you come in here, Fariki Mentor will recall when we served on another committee, whose name I won't mention now, the Auditor General brought to our attention the fact that a particular entity was facing civil suit. And that particular entity hadn't provided in its budget for what they refer to as a contingent liability reserve or fund. And they said to this entity, you know you're facing this case, and as such you should say to Treasury, we need to set aside a certain sum of money in the event that we lose. That's the first thing. What prevents departments from doing that? Because a lot of these cases don't happen overnight.
Mm.
I don't go to the High Court and tomorrow the High Court rules in my favor. You know that. It takes years.
Mm.
And so these departments and entities have lots of time in which to prepare for this. So while I agree that we're not looking for anarchy, but we also have another responsibility.
Mm.
You see, Nyati was a little man. He wasn't asking for millions. All he was saying to the state was, you are responsible for my condition. All I'm looking for is some money so that I can go to the hospital, they can care for me, and I can get my health back. And the state refused. So that's the other responsibility which we face and we can't ignore. So Accountant General, just respond to those things. Also, the Makgoro judgment. I think that's very important. Why can't you play that role? And when departments are faced with this situation, go to them and say, this is the way out for you. But instead, what we're faced with is DGs and heads of entities who simply dig their heels in, act very stubbornly, and in the long run, the state loses far more than it would have if certain steps hadn't been taken a lot earlier.
Thanks, Chair. Can I deal with that question last of the Makgoro judgment so that I can dispense with the other questions first? There was a question about unauthorized expenditure and adjustment appropriation. I think the adjustment appropriation could be made to honor unauthorized expenditure, but unauthorized expenditure is a situation where you've got a budget, you've got X amount of money allocated to you, and there's two instances where it occurs. In one instance, you've got money to build, and I'm going to make a very simplistic example so that you get the point. You've got money to build, to engage in a particular project, you use the money for a different project. So you use the money for something which was not authorized by Parliament in the first place. Or, you've got X amount in your budget, you spend more than that. So those are the two instances in which unauthorized expenditure occurs. Why I liken this to unauthorized expenditure in the manner in which you would deal with it after the fact is that the question raised, I think, is the Premier of the Western Cape is around appropriation, and that this would not be appropriated for, which leads us to the question, why are departments not budgeting for these expenses? I don't want to claim to remember the rationale off my head. I do not work with budgets directly. But I know that there is a sense in which a particular judgment, for instance, a particular collision liability that would arise out of a court settlement could be justified to budget for. But there is a sense in which allowing that to happen could also result in perverse outcomes. I would rather, instead of providing a definite answer to the committee, can I ask my colleagues in the budget office to write formally and address that question to the committee. The second question, so this could come, for instance, with the adjustment budget if it arises in a department and the department had not foreseen it or some such. But unauthorized expenditure doesn't just go to the adjustment budget, it goes to SCOPA first. It goes to SCOPA, SCOPA defines the unauthorized expenditure. And once they are happy, they might say, we are happy, we understand why you engaged in that project instead of that other project, and we understand the state benefited, and we are happy with it. And they can say one or two things. They can say, we are happy with it, and we will agree that you get additional funds. In which case, that goes to the adjustment budget, and then it gets dealt with the adjustment budget, depending on the time of the year. If it's the time of the year when it's the beginning of the year, it would go into the normal budget. But that would have been a ruling by a committee of parliament, SCOPA. It doesn't automatically go there. And a case like this would, in my mind, have to go through a similar process so that parliament can make its decision around that activity which led to the department either being sued or there being a judgment against the department. So that's the rationale. And then there's point about negotiating that Honorable Mrosin is raising, negotiating with the Treasury, get the money and so on. The budget process does not, and sometimes when the Treasury are guilty of this, we do not give money to anybody. Treasury facilitates the process, manages the process that enables Parliament to decide who gets the money and how much they get. The appropriation bill is before Parliament, is still debated before Parliament, and once Parliament has made a ruling on that appropriation bill and it becomes an appropriation act, that allocates the money to the departments. As the Treasury, together with other departments, we engage in a process that informs that decision by Parliament, but the decision remains the decision of Parliament. So coming back to the point of the Mokgoro decision, in the discussions that I made reference to that have taken place recently in the Treasury, having had considered sight of the comments, there is a group in the Treasury that feels strongly that we need to consider what that judgment was saying and whether that judgment could obviate all the other things. Now, and we're looking at the implications of that and we want to engage the Department of Justice. But if the committee directs that in this bill that issue is not being considered and that issue must be considered, I think it can give that instruction to Treasury and Justice to look at it. I don't think it would be that long to deal with it. We had in the past drafted some clauses that we thought would go into the Public Finance Management Act that would deal with that judgment. So if the committee directs as such, then you can engage the Department of Justice and you can pull up some of those clauses. The only thing that we are uncomfortable with as the Treasurer, or there are two things. The first one is that there is a sense in which that once a court order is made,
you want to be absolutely certain that this court order is a general court order, and in fact it arises out of an obligation that a department has. So you would need to have time to verify that. Maybe say, if you don't put a clause like that, you say maybe the treasury together with the departments needs to have maybe 2 months, 3 months to sort that out, that payment be honored in that period. That would be the adjustment that we would make in the Mohoro judgment as it was. As it was, it was very, very tight. Why are we not putting this as a suggestion to the Department of Justice? The PSMA is based on the principle that accounting officers in various departments have got a responsibility to decide on the resources entrusted upon them by Parliament. So, not so much as giving too much to the Treasury, as it was about ensuring that accounting officers remain responsible for the resources that are at their disposal, and that responsibility is entrenched in all of the legislation. It's not that Treasury did not want to take it in that responsibility. If there's a piece of legislation that says, should there be an order, a court order, and that court order is properly verified, and you know this court order is kosher against a particular department, that court order will have the effect of that department's vote being debited. Remember, we're not taking money from the National Revenue Fund. Treasury will not be taking money from the revenue fund, as some of the commentators were suggesting. The money will be coming out of the money already appropriated by Parliament for that department. So as if the department had to put a new budget, and there's a court order, all the expenses of that court order lead up to 500 million. All it means is that that department for that year now already has available 1.5 billion, because that 500 million would have to go to meet that. It's not that Treasury would have to go out and raise new money. Only, leading this back to the point that I was making, only when SCOPA has dealt with this issue, or some other committee of Parliament, maybe the committee that is relevant for that department, together with SCOPA, have dealt with this issue and decided that, look, there's additional funds that have to be given to that department, then additional funds would be made available. But the thinking, if you apply the Mohoro judgment, you would use funds already appropriated, which means the department has less money available on its budget, as opposed to putting additional money. Treasury does not have that power. Only to the extent that there is appropriated already a contingency fund, and that contingency fund is normally for specific reasons, and there are specific ways in which you can use it. Only to the extent that you've got that you would use it. But primarily, it would be money already appropriated, and that money would be taken out of that department's vote. But an institution like Treasury, which has got access to the National Revenue Fund, where all of these accounts are, could facilitate that, which is what Justice Mohoro had said. And that is in fact what is applicable now until August, when the judgment expires. I think I have addressed all of the questions, maybe not satisfactorily.
I think theoretically, Parliament approves the budget. It's not even theoretical. I mean, the ability to amend money bills is only something that has come recently, and even then, it's not like an ordinary bill. I mean, there's a to and fro process back to the Minister of Finance for comment before such an amendment can be made. So look, with respect, the reality is that budget comes from the Minister of Finance. It comes from Treasury. And Treasury plays a key point in the compilation of the appropriation bill or any adjustments appropriation bill. And I think that's why one is seeing a place for Treasury. The point of the verification of judgments in the 2 months, I mean, that's a non-starter. I mean, the 14 days may be too short. We can look at 14 days, but you know, it is being served It has to be served with a certificate by the register or clerk of that court that there's no appeal. It's not difficult to verify, and we can maybe look at extending it beyond the 2 week period, but 2 months is a complete non-starter, and we may just need to apply our minds to that. But Chair, I do think that we should, as the committee, it's not saying that we're going to go that route, but we do need to get a response from Treasury and the Justice Department as to why the process outlined in the Makhoro order cannot be form part of the bill. In other words, Provincial National Treasury being a sort of facilitating body. I think that's crucial. My suspicion is maybe it's unfair on Treasury, but if I were in Treasury, I would not want it. But my suspicion is Treasury, we're looking at the needs of Treasury rather than the needs of the country. Can we through you, Chair, can we get that?
In mind, as Mr. Rudman warned, that there are some of these issues that they may need to take back, including this one. So that if we want Treasury to play that facilitating role, they need to be made aware of it. I'm not sure that it's enough that we say to Accountant General, right, it's done, and then he goes back and says, hey, those guys in the Justice, I know they've added us, given us this additional task. So that may just be one other.
Look, the bill is with us. We can do whatever changes we like. The minister, I mean, I'm doing I'll go from the theory to the practical. The job is then for the minister to decide whether he wants to withdraw it or not. I think that I don't think this was an issue that is new, okay, to Treasury. I think there's been substantial debate on this particular area. So it's more that we are coming in on one side of that debate. If the Minister of Finance complains bitterly and we hear that look, there's a request for that to go to Cabinet, fine. But let's cross that bridge when we get to it. And I think that obviously Mr. Nomvalo would be briefing the Minister of Finance as to where we're going. I don't think anyone else from the executive would have a problem. But yeah.
Without debating, Chair, I just want to emphasize 2 points. One is that I really want everybody to recognize that, that everybody really recognize that the budget process involves more than just the Treasury. There's a group of ministers that come together and decide on the allocations guided by the priorities of government. And once that is done, those ministers make a representation to Cabinet. And Cabinet decides that this is the budget for the country. But Cabinet doesn't have the power to make the decision, they take it to Parliament. So, yes, Treasury chairs that process, but we should all appreciate, because otherwise we really put undue pressure on that department. And sometimes called upon by the department itself, but the process is really different from that. The second point, Chair, is that we honestly did try to avoid a situation where departments just defer to the Treasury for all of these payments. In as far as the Makhoro judgment is there, we put processes in place to deal with it, because we've got no option, we have to deal with it. The time is too short. And should we be given an opportunity to look into this, we will provide reasons to the committee why we think that even a month might not be enough to make sure that you pay for it. Because once you've paid, and the person takes that money all over, you're not going to be able to get that money back. So you need sufficient time to make sure that when you make the final payment, when the department concerned has failed to do so in time. I know delaying it an extra day is delaying it far too much from the perspective of the person that
afford to receive that money. But we will make a motivation for that. In our other responsibility, Chair, we do receive a lot of issues where there's money deducted directly from the employees' bank accounts. And it gets decided through the court processes. I'm not 100% certain where exactly. And some of those, they really leave much to be desired. So we would really want to make sure that when we make a payment and use the state's money to honor an obligation that we're not party to upfront, we get sufficient time to look into the issues and then respond appropriately. But if we are directed to look into the Mokoro judgment as part of what would go into the legislation, we will definitely consider that.
It's not as though you don't have state law advisors there to tell you, yes, this is a judgment. So, I mean, I can't see that taking 14 days. I just can't. I mean, then there'd be something seriously wrong with it, you know. There is consensus, unless I'm wrong, that we should stick to movable property. There is consensus also that... not consensus.
Yeah, no, there was also Ms. Mentor, but I wanted to suggest that I mean, the rest of us, I think, there's consensus, so maybe there's sufficient consensus, but I think you had asked the state law advisors for a response. Maybe not now, I mean, it should be in writing. Maybe when we get that response, we can then look whether we want to reopen it at all.
General also suggested that Treasury's Budget Committee should write to us as well. If you can facilitate that, all right. The execution against state property in general, as opposed to the relevant department or entity, do we have consensus on that? Yes, we do. All right, making progress. Okay, so Mr. Radman, you have that. Okay.
I mean, where are we going with that in terms of the inputs? Because
opportunity to respond in writing.
Yes. Okay.
All right.
And I think that could include if they have been implementing that. How has that gone?
Okay.
Yeah.
Before I recognize you, I've been somewhat rude to the Honourable Shoppistone. My apologies.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm not taking you away from the consensus. I'm happy with that. I just want to give some advice to the Justice Committee that although Treasury sounds very friendly today and, you know, sort of forgiving and all that, according to the PFMA, the accounting officer of that department is responsible for accounting to us as Parliament. That is one. Two, I heard the Treasury saying the unauthorized expenditure is okayed or not okayed by SCOPA. For this department, I don't want this department to go to SCOPA. I've got my own reservation. It's got to be okayed by ourselves as your portfolio committee. Because you see, your journey to SCOPA is already prejudicing you. SCOPA only works after the Auditor General has given a report of dissatisfaction. You see, so we would like you to come to us because we are your portfolio committee. You don't have to go and be screaming and begging in SCOPA. Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff. I think the suggestion that Treasury should look at how to deal or to respond or to relook at the current dispensation in the line of the Mokoro interim measures, we can assist them in terms of the current civil processes and the challenges, the short time frames, 30 days and so on. But I think I want to commend the committee on its decision in terms of when the debt is satisfied, it should not affect the other department, which are the part to the litigation, because otherwise would have problems for the PFMA. You would have to amend PFMA quite tremendous, a special section that But I must also point out that the crafted current interim dispensation by Justice Makhor, our experiences now, for example in the Northwest, 10 vehicles from the Department of Agriculture was attached without the first 30-day period having expired. And when we went to court to file a notice to oppose, they then withdrew, they had to return the cars. Now, there's a lot of mischief that we can look at the current existing interim order, which from judgment creditor point of view seems to be satisfactory and lucrative in terms of ensuring the state that it satisfies its court judgment.
I mean, just I hadn't thought of it before, but the operation of the interim order, you know, what's broken? I think that's the question for me, because if there's nothing broken, then what needs to be fixed? We go with that order. Okay, so I think it would be useful for a proper input on these are the problems, if any, of the order that we have experienced with practical examples. And, you know, the fact that, just basically that point. Then the aspect, though, that nobody's, it's just dropped, and I wanted to bring it back. Action against employees, responsible employees who do not settle debts that have got into this process. Can we get something on that? I don't know whether it would be, because I would like to see, and it would provide a deterrent. I'm not so much interested in criminal sanctions. There's probably enough criminal sanction in the PFMA, but I would want to ensure that maybe there's a report to Parliament every 6 months on the numbers of judgment debts that were not met, and the reasons why and who the person was responsible, and what their reason for not meeting the debt is, and the property ended up being attached.
Mr. Rudman, the Accountant General has expressed the wish that your people and his people sit down together and share some ideas. I trust that will take place, well, if not today, then certainly as soon as possible, so that you all can both come back to us with the results of those discussions. We expect something from you and your team. And then also from the Budget Committee, Accountant General, you said that they would send us something in writing. So,
okay, that has always been our intention, to meet with them and to thresh out these issues.
Okay. Now, that being the case, that's it. Done for the day. Thank you very much. We had planned to continue tomorrow on this issue, state liability, but it doesn't look like it's going to be possible. Have nothing.
No, I say we can't say anything more on
this
state
for
liability
now.
For
yes.
Now.
All right. Bonani, can you assist us? Harassment. All right, Vonani's going to check to see whether they're ready with harassment or any criminal. Otherwise, maybe we can do traffic. All right, just check with them. All right? Vonani will get back to us in the usual manner. All right, thank you.
Guess what? I was told by Professor from taking funding. Yes, last week. Yeah. He was asking whether both of them travel as far as GD. I'm back in practice as an attorney.
Yeah.
If you are around GD, please give me a call.
No, you can put practice.
Oh, yeah.
You can put practice.
Okay.
And in fact, during that time when your head is over, he was already starting practicing. Yeah. In fact, he doesn't have anything about him.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Well, he still has unfaithful now.
Go on, make them.